Hey y'all, what's good? What's good? What's up? What's up? Welcome back to Memory Lane. So as promised, I want to send this one out to all my player haters. I'm just joking. I'm acting like I'm about to drop some bars or something. But like I mentioned yesterday on the State of the Raptors episode, and if you love your Raptors, check that episode out as well. Favorite it and put in your episode list once you check this one. This week is the 8th anniversary of my first ever podcast. This was an interesting time, man. It was close to 3 years before that. Back in 2013, I started up, and I should probably announce a segment as story time here a little bit. Yeah, story time right now. Story time with Cal C right now. Close to 3 years before that, I had started up South Sharav as a blog. And a big part of the reason why is I always envisioned doing something with media. And for years, I used to believe that would be in radio, right? There was a few inspirations for that. So to start off, I was inspired by some of my favorite mix shows back in the day, like Funkmaster Flex, for example. Yes, I know he's a DJ, you know, but he was such a big personality on Hot 97 back in the day that it always used to pique my interest. One of my many interests, I would say, you know, not just media, because I was a ball head, a crazy ball head back then, basketball head. But even before my Funkmaster Flex experience, my brother, DJ Chris Nice, used to have a mix show on WBLK in Buffalo, 93.7 FM. Yeah, he used to have this mix show. So every time I would come to Toronto, I would spend hours with him in Ron Nelson's studio watching them put the show together. So that, I'm sure, sparked the initial interest. Shout out to DJ Chris Nice for that, because you never know what those experiences do in the future, you know, so that's evidence right there. I've grown up around DJs my whole life. Even my pops is a big DJ back in the day, too, which is why I always have a love for the art form of DJing. But one of my interests was, ironically enough, was something to do with media, to circle this all the way back. So I started this podcast because it was that itch that I didn't get to scratch properly. You know, I had made a couple of attempts to try to get on radio, but it didn't work out. You know, so I jumped in the workforce and kind of parked the dream. And, you know, but that itch, man, that itch, like it was itching like a bitch. So, you know, I started a blog and I started warming up to the idea of getting behind the mic again. And I definitely took my time with it. You know, for a while, I only share my blog with just a certain group of friends. They know who they are. Shout out to those guys. And they were the ones that gave me more and more confidence with each post. And then I just really started putting together the idea of really doing this podcast. And, you know, I did a couple of shows, most notably, you know, a while back, probably in the late 2000s. I was a guest on a couple of shows that are, you know, our deceased South Shire family member Headley used to engineer. It was on UFT 89.5 FM at the time. I cannot remember the name of the show. The host of the show, it was a woman named Jessie. She was actually, it was her show that Headley used to engineer. So I did a couple of shows as a guest, but, you know, so I wasn't a novice, but I just didn't know how I was going to sound or how this was going to be. And I had my supporters prior to doing this, like a Headley, but also my brothers, you know, my wife, Dion, my cousin, Brian. You know, I didn't tell a lot of people because I knew if I was going to do it, I just wanted to drop it on everybody unexpectedly. Right. So I recorded it about a week and a half or 2 weeks before. And I just took my time editing it and putting it together. But man, I won't lie to you, man. I was a little nervous, you know, so when I dropped it, I was actually shocked at the feedback and how much support I got back to me, you know, even with the subject matter, you know, because it wasn't like a universal topic. And it made my initial anxiety feel, I guess, foolish, you know, and I was appreciative at the time and I still am, you know, and I'm still out here fighting the good fight for podcasts, even though it's hella saturated right now, you know, but I still fight the good fight, you know, so that's my little story with how the app got started. And I'm going to reshare my first episode, my first pod. All right. It's funny because the one thing I remember, too, that was I initially had no idea what the subject matter was going to be for the first episode. You know, and every time I thought about it, I kept coming back to Vince Carter, you know, so I just went with that energy. you know, that was my initial piece of audio content. Yeah, myself as well as you know, another South Shire family member, Big Brother Curtis. I got him on the show as my first guest, and I wanted to have an honest conversation about Vince Carter, you know, who I will say was the most talented Raptor to ever put on the uniform. You know, it wasn't a love fest, but we weren't bashing him either. You know, it was just an honest conversation. Now, I advise once again, this was my first podcast, so the sound wasn't the greatest. You know, when I listened to some of my first episodes, I sometimes cringe listening to it, you know, with a self-critical ear. But anyways, pardon my rookiness. All right, pardon my rookiness. But listening back to it now, you know, it actually wasn't too bad, at least, you know, for a first episode. But I'm here to play it back for you now, so I hope you enjoy it, or re-enjoy it, if you will. Oh, yes, the 5 stars, please. The 5 stars. Give me that 5. I needs the 5. I want the 5. Give me the 5. 5 stars. Welcome to Memory Lane on South Shiraf Radio. Let's go. The first topic, I should say, for this episode that I wanted to discuss is, in the last month or so, especially with the All-Star coming to Toronto, there was a lot of focus, almost like a moment that we've been having with romanticizing the idea of Vince Carter, the history of Vince Carter and his legacy that he left in this city. And I saw the, I don't know if you caught it, but I saw the show that they had with Steve Smith, around the All-Star weekend, which was good. And it was, it made you reminisce about some of the highlights and some of the things that he did, you know, especially at the beginning when he came here. But we keep romanticizing the fact of, you know, like, we're supposed to move on and everything else. But I'm not so sure. I don't want to say I'm bitter still, but I guess I'm a little bitter, like a scoring level, just a little bit.
It's our history, so it's part of the Raptor Toronto basketball history, so you can't just move on. It's part of the history.
Well, we definitely got to talk about it. So personally for me, I wanted to, especially after watching the show and even watching the highlights of him still catching dunks. I don't know if you caught the one the other day where he caught a reverse alley-oop on Rondo.
I saw that.
And I mean, even right before the All-Star game, he had a couple in the Nets where I was like, man, like, could this guy still be in the dunk contest still? You know, it was ridiculous. And it just, it made you almost be in awe of him, but then still shake your head in disgust just because of what could have been, you know. And that's something I definitely want to discuss. He has a rich history here in Toronto, especially with the Raptors, good and bad. And I just wanted to get into it a little bit. Okay, so a couple things here. Let's get into the legacy that he had, whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. What is his true impact in basketball, I guess?
Now we're speaking of impact in Toronto or in general.
We can speak on both, to be quite honest, because I got a lot to say on both of those sides.
Well, for me, in regards to his impact in Toronto, definitely. He's definitely had a rich impact on the city and the players that keep coming through this great pipeline of ours. Mm-hmm. In basketball here in Toronto. But like I said about a minute ago, it's the history of Toronto basketball. It includes Vince Carter. It doesn't start with Vince Carter. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I've heard this discussion, this debate going on for the last couple of months in regards to these young cats giving praise to Vince, and rightfully so. They watched him growing up, mm-hmm. and whatnot. But the history of basketball started way before Vince Carter here in Toronto.
Okay, well, we'll hold that thought. We're definitely going to get into that part a little bit later in the podcast. So we'll hold that thought. So what I'm going to do actually is just go step by step, just each year that he had with the Raptors, starting with his rookie year of 1999, which, for those that don't remember, that was the lockout shortened season that we had back in 1998. So I think they played like 50 games that year. Mm. And I believe you were with me when one of the first practices they had, I don't know if you remember that, it was a free practice. Mm-hmm. And
that's the only time we went out.
But a lot of people still, at least in this city, didn't know who Vince Carter was.
I spiced it up for you, though. Remember I bought you popcorn? And
I don't remember that. Didn't you spit in it?
Yeah.
But anyways, so we went to the practice, and he was still very new to the city, especially with the lockout. You know, there wasn't a lot of basketball talk or having a lot of players here during that 3.5 months that that the lockout was happening during that time. And that first practice, you could see that there was something special. Just the athleticism, which if you're a ball head at that time, you already knew all about that already. But just the chemistry that he had with Tracy McGrady, you just saw just a different level of athleticism that we just weren't used to, you know?
Well, back then, his fame is already known from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So coming in, we're a new franchise, still fairly new. And any good player coming into the city, everybody was interested in. So
yeah,
this is an opportunity to get an All-American player, which we all welcome in full. And he showed up, and he didn't disappoint. His first couple of years, he didn't disappoint.
No, and the funny thing is that him and Tracy, they had a little mini dunk contest. I don't know if you remember.
But yeah,
they had a little
yeah.
mini dunk contest. Yeah. And some of the things that these guys are doing, I think Christy was a part of it at the beginning too, and then he just stepped away just because.
Yeah, he did a windmill. I remember he did a windmill just standing right under the basket. Carter did.
Yeah, like it was like dunking on a Nerf hoop even then.
Yeah, it was.
And just the casual fans right there was like, you got them locked in already. So I'll just go over the stats just for his first year. He averaged 18 a game, 5.7 rebounds, 3 assists. He got a steal and a block. But he did a lot of special things even in that short period of time. Of course, the legendary dunk on Mutombo when he went baseline against the Hawks. The absolutely legendary dunk, the reverse dunk that he had on Chris Mullin. That's something that has to be replayed over and over again. That's one of the greatest highlights you'll ever
Pacers.
See for the Raptors when they were playing against the Pacers.
Yeah.
They didn't make the playoffs, but you could see something forming. You didn't know exactly what was happening, but you saw it coming. And it was the first time being, especially in this city, that, you know, I think 3 years prior, you know, was an expansion. They were just, the Raptors were still trying to find their legs in the NBA and in the city.
And that's the thing, though. Like, because we're so young at the time, the franchise that is, we're just looking for hype. And we're not looking to win championships at that point. We're just looking to get the franchise going, right? Mm-hmm. To get the franchise rolling and lock into a good name, a good player. And we had the fortunate to draft him, Vince Carter, and his magnificent athletic ability, and we just rode that for a while. But the athletic ability, of course, that was the main reason that everything went through the roof with Vince.
And here's a great what if, and a friend of mine, shout out to Kevin, who brought this up just a couple of days ago when I was discussing this topic with him. What if we kept Antoine Jameson? Will we still have the Raptors in Toronto?
Oh.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Right? Because, I mean, Vancouver left, you know, a couple of years later. You know, that could have been us too. You know, that could have been, that definitely could have been, that could have been a situation where, you know, they could have been heading to Buffalo or wherever else they could have went at the time.
I still don't think so because, again, and we'll touch about it later, but the history of basketball in Toronto is a lot richer than Vancouver.
Yeah. Right? I definitely agree to that.
The East Coast basketball in Canada is the East Coast basketball in Canada. It's not BC where there's a handful of pockets.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we'll go into year two, the second year. This is where he made the leap. He averaged 25.7 points, 5.8 boards, 3.9 assists, 1.3 steals, basically a block a game. He averaged 47 from the field, 79 from the line, 40% from the three-point line. He was actually the third team All-NBA that year. Hmm. And just some of the highlights that he basically became a superstar. It was probably the most exciting Raptors team in the history of that team. Because think about it. Vince made that leap. Tracy McGrady started really finding his legs that third season and started playing a lot more, even more so than the 99 season. He started having a lot more impact. You can see the confidence was growing with him. And what I used to love about that Raptors team is Vince would dunk on you so viciously. And if he didn't get you, Tracy got you. If they didn't get you, Doug Christie got you. If Doug Creasy didn't get you. Here came Antonio Davis. Hmm. You know, and then on top of that, you still had the solid veteran group. You had Oakley, you had Muggsy Bogues, Del Curry came, you know, otherwise known as Steph Curry's dad. So you had a D Brown was another one. You had a solid veteran group that mixed in with the core of Vince and T-Mac. But you could see that leap came, and it was.
I tip my hat to the organization at that point, because they basically give him the keys to the car.
Yeah.
Right. Like the rookie year, he got his driver's license.
Yeah.
He got his permit, I should say. Then he got his driver's license, and Dad actually said, "Here's the keys to the car. You can actually take it on the freeway and drive." And that's what he did. Like, remember when you got your first taste of driving solo? Road.
Yeah, yeah.
Without pops next to you.
Oh yeah.
You had fun, right? And that's what it was all about. They had fun with that vehicle.
But he went from a G1 to just getting the full G. Skipped the G2.
Oh yeah, he had fun with the car.
And I'll just go over a couple of other highlights here. The first game they played against the Milwaukee Bucks after Vince Carter initially got snubbed from the Olympic team. I don't know if you remember this. This was one of the greatest games that I've ever watched Vince Carter play. If I remember correctly, and I'm just going off the top of my head here, he had about 47 points. He had about three or four of the craziest dunks I've ever seen in my life. And he had one where he went in between two guys going baseline, and he did a little scoop shot. And it went off the rim, went off the backboard. And Kevin Willis, you remember this? Kevin Willis went and he tried to get the rebound, and he climbed Kevin Willis' back.
I remember that. He got his own board.
And dunked all over his head.
Yeah.
And then about a few plays later, they got a steal of Muggsy Bogues, throws it out to him. But he did this windmill that I swear he would have banged his head on the backboard. He was so high.
Hmm.
And two things after that game what I started to realize. Number one, I actually, for the first time, started thinking to myself, man, do we actually have a Michael Jordan here? Is this actually happening?
Hmm.
You know? And then the second part is, and I felt like this was our reward for being a basketball fan in Toronto. Meaning, and I speak for hundreds of thousands of ball fans in Canada. Hmm. Who had to endure waiting for sports desk to come on and waiting for like a half hour for the highlights, mm-hmm. and then getting the one highlight and then just showing the box scores, you know when the Lakers and the Celtics would be playing, or the Lakers and the Bulls, or some big NBA game would come on. Yep, and it would get bumped for curling, you know. And what was, I always want to be in the mind of the program director at that point in time, because on his desk, he gets the option where it's, Michael Jordan versus Magic Johnson, or the Scott Tournament of Hearts for curling. No, you got to go with the Hearts. Yeah. Scott Tournament of Hearts, let's go. Sweep. You know, so all those years, we had to endure just being last place in terms of being a sports fan and being at the bottom of the totem pole. And now here comes this transcendent talent, and it made you finally, and it's happening in your city on top of that. We're, you know, like for anybody that was living in Toronto at the time, you know, 20 minutes away, you can go to the arena and watch this every night, this transcendent talent coming through every night. And it just, to me, I felt like it you were finally being rewarded for being a basketball fan in this country. And that meant so much to so much people at that point in time, like right at that point to me.
Yeah, it was a great time. It was a great time to be in for a baller within Canada, nevertheless Toronto. And the nice thing about it was like instant food. It's like you add water and all of a sudden you had a great team,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
It was just instant. It just happened like a click of the finger. And it, his personality, his charisma, everything at the time was...
Yeah.
It just all fit. It was just perfect.
And it was unlike the Grizzlies, where they were still struggling.
Yeah.
You know, they were barely winning 20 games.
Yeah, again, you added water and you had Toronto Raptors and you had all the talent coming there. And and anywhere they went across the NBA, it was like kind of like the Warriors now. Anytime they play, it was like must see TV.
Yeah,
right back then.
Oh yeah, and that was probably the only time. And as much as I love this Raptors team now, it was the first time where I used to be pissed off if I missed a game.
Oh yeah,
like you're actually like, oh, I can't believe I missed. You know, I missed this game, and then you see the highlights, and then you'd be disappointed that you didn't get a chance to watch it live.
Yeah,
you know, there was always something special going on, and of course, this leads to the dunk contest. We got to touch on that.
Mm, yeah. I mean, that was special.
I still think that was the single greatest performance ever in the dunk contest. Mind you,
this pass was kind of sick. this year's was kind of sick. It happened in Toronto.
Yeah,
again.
LaVine versus Gordon was absolutely legendary.
Yeah, that's going to stand the test of time there.
And what made it legendary is that I don't think anybody saw that coming.
No.
You know, so that's what made it even better. But the thing with Vince Carter with the dunk contest was you knew the hype that was going in.
Yeah, the build-up for months prior was ridiculous. And the thing about it is they had some special athletes in there as well, including Tracy.
Tracy McGrady, right? Steve Francis, who any other year would have won that dunk contest.
Yeah.
But yeah, the hype was just, it was unreal going into it. You just even the casual fan, everybody was waiting for this.
That was one of those days where you remember where you were when that event happened.
Oh, it's a complete pop culture moment. And I stand by this. His first dunk that he did in that contest, to me, I don't care what anybody says, that is the greatest dunk.
That windmill?
That I've ever seen in the dunk contest.
The windmill, the dumbbell, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it the other day.
16 years later, you're still shaking your head.
My 14-year-old son, Jalen, we saw it the other day, and he dropped on the chair. It was, and this is after the Gordon and LaVine highlight. Yeah. And Jalen dropped on the chair and said, "Oh my God." And he went on YouTube and checked the rest of the dunk contest out.
Which, yeah, for those who don't remember, or if you were one of the five people who didn't see it, go back and YouTube that. That was one of the best dunk contests ever. But that 360 windmill going the opposite way, I don't care what anybody says, there's no greater dunk.
And then the power, the height, and the power which he flushed it was ridiculous. The ball went through the hoop like it was a projectile.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
And basically after that, he had every fan in the palm of his hand right after. He could do anything else after that. It didn't matter. It was almost like being at a concert. Hmm. And Michael Jackson comes out and he starts performing and he points at you.
Yeah.
You know, he says to you right there. And after that, you're done. You don't even have to hear any other song he sung. You know, that's it. It's over. You know, and that to me, that was Vince Carter after that dunk contest. And I mean, we were running around. Like, that's the only time in my life where I was actually like a little kid. Every dunk that he did, I was basically running around the house. We all were running around the house, bumping into each other. Like, I was exhausted. You almost needed a cigarette after it was done.
Shout out to Rafiq. He was in the house, remember?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And like I said again, I think that was the greatest moment that he's ever... That might be the greatest basketball moment I think he might have ever had.
Of course it was.
You know?
Yeah, that definitely... solidified him.
Unfortunately, was it a dunk contest or was it an exhibition that didn't count? But
but you know what? He did those dunks in games anyhow. Like
that's true.
He did dunk contest moves in games.
Yeah, which is true. And then after that, you know, he rode the momentum for the rest of the season. After that, they made the playoffs. As I mentioned before, he was a third team all NBA, but they got knocked out by the Knicks in three games in a three game sweep. But you started to feel once again that you're finally being rewarded for being a basketball fan, and you can see that light at the end of the tunnel, right? Now, the some of the low lights, or you started to see that Vince Carter's soft demeanor started to poke his head out. Anybody remembers anytime he used to get injured, it was almost like he got shot, or worse, you know, he always, every time, it didn't matter if he twisted his ankle, he hurt his knee, you know, if somebody hit him on the wrist, you know, anything that might have happened. Somebody tugged on his shirt. He was going down, you know, like a war vet and being carried off. Like it was, you know, that stuff started really poking out. I think that if that would have happened now, I honestly believe that would have replaced the Jordan cry face meme. Anything that happened, you would just see this Vince Carter's body laid out on the floor, just on anything. It would have been like the meme, the go-to meme, if that was around now. But he started to see that the little bit of the soft demeanor started to poke his head out of. Even with all the amazing plays and everything else, he started to slowly
I think what
that.
You saw most of all, for me anyhow, and back then a lot of people thought I was crazy because I used to say, look at trading him soon because he's not, or you got to get somebody else, an alpha dog in the house, on the court, not even in the clubhouse, but on the court. Because for me back then, Vince Carter was always a Robin. He was never a Batman.
I don't know, man.
To me, because when it came time for really the meat and potatoes, winning the games, when it really, really counted, like you started to see him not be there, like pulling up lame and getting hurt too often, and it took a toll on the team, I thought.
But after the second season, like, I wouldn't go there just yet. I think he was still an alpha dog mode. I think leading to this, that's part of the reason why.
But he was an alpha dog only because there was nothing on the line. It was still driving daddy's car. There was nothing on the line. There was no real goal at the end of that rainbow. There was just get Toronto on the map, and let's be a player in the league.
Well, one thing I remember from that Knicks series, just to go on, just touch on that really quickly, is this. After the first game they lost, I'll never forget watching Tracy McGrady. He balled out that first game. 25 points, 10 rebounds. Just, he was going through the Knicks like Swiss cheese. It was so easy for him, right? And Vince Carter struggled. I think Vince Carter at the time went like 3-for-19, 3-for-20. Everything, like they were being physical with him. He couldn't take the physicality. And after the game, all everybody could talk about is how Vince Carter went 3-for-20. Nobody mentioned Tracy McGrady and what he did. It was like a small blurb at the end of the article. And I remember right at that point, right after game one, I said, "Man, we might lose T-Mac."
Yeah, because again, he's the face of the organization at the time, right?
Yeah.
He was almost the face of the NBA. He was one of the faces of the NBA.
Yeah.
Right?
And deservedly so.
And he didn't show up when it counted.
Yeah.
So, of course, that's what the talking heads are going to talk about.
And people looked at it as, well, it's his first playoff game and everything else. But, you know, a part of you was like, I don't know.
But I was calling that. I was calling it prior to the play. I was calling that. Like, because, again, in Carolina, Jameson was the man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He was that Robin character.
Yeah.
A high level Robin, but he was a Robin character.
So the alpha dog that you may have that you were saying that we needed, we kind of had it. But he left. He went to Orlando.
Yeah.
Right? But I've always said two things about Vince, about Tracy leaving is one of two things would happen. Either one, he would have took over the team and been that alpha dog. Or he would have pushed Vince Carter to a level that we would have never seen in the history of the league. It was either one of the two. And, unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to see it. And it's funny, even Kobe Bryant to this day says that if they would have stuck together, he said 100% we would have been meeting them in the finals and not the Nets and the Sixers and whoever else they met during those times. Because who was stopping in his prime Vince Carter and in his prime T-Mac? You know, because what hurt most is right after he left for Orlando that season. Remember, his game jumped like three levels.
Shoe contracts messed that up. Seriously, because I tell we laugh, but like, yo, shoe contracts messed that up. Because it's all about self.
Yeah.
Back then, it's all about marketing. It's all about self
and being the man.
And being the man.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not like now where everybody wants to be part of a team.
And even back in the day, everybody wanted to be part of the team. There was that era where people were like identifying one guy as the team.
Yeah.
Right. So everybody wanted their own team.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't work.
Now, mind you, when T-Mac was going to Orlando, you know, Grant Hill was waiting, but we didn't know Grant Hill was going to have all the injuries and everything else that he had. So he ended up being the man, but he was leaving, to me at the time, one situation to almost be the, you know, the Robin in another situation, because at that time Grant Hill was the man, right? So he left in the summer of 2000. You had the whole thing with Tank Black, his agent, going to jail and everything else that happened there. His brother was going through some substance abuse problems and went to jail. So you had a Vince had a hard summer on top of T-Mac leaving, and which
and his mother running his life still.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
sorry. That too. Yeah,
don't probably the biggest problem. Space, yeah.
But then,
grown ass man. Anyhow, go ahead.
But which ended at the point where the Olympics that happened in 2000 in Sydney, and
another highlight moment,
another pop culture moment. Yeah. You know, he was basically the guy, even though he was like a replacement. He was the man on that team.
But again, he was the man because there was no pressure on him to be the man. He was the man because he was just running and doing his thing. He wasn't expected to take that last second shot, right, or whatnot. Right. And that's where he flourishes, when he's in that role.
Right. And then, of course, he had the dunk of death on Frederick Weiss.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was another where were you moment. I don't know how you hurdle a 7-footer. Even the jump over a 6'5" guys. Nah. Clear his head is ridiculous, but, you know.
Even my 11-year-old, that's kind of hard.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. So right then, I think everybody bought back into the whole Vince Carter brand after that. So we go into his third season now, which technically was his best season, or statistically was his best season. 27.6 points, 5 boards, 3.9 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 46% from the field, 76 from the line, 41 from three. He was second team All-NBA. It was his best season statistically, but you started to see like something was missing. First of all, he came out after that series, started shooting more threes than ever before.
Yeah.
And the stats back it up. He went from attempting 2.9 a game to 5.3, you know, which is a big difference.
Well, what you started to see was now Toronto was just not satisfied with just making the playoffs. They wanted to make a run at something.
Yeah, they wanted to make an impact.
And again, I don't think he was ever that player. He was always that Robin, but he was thrust into a Batman role. But he's wearing that mask falsely.
But I think that season we started to find out, you know, that
he's a Robin.
Yeah, that he was wearing Batman's clothing, but he still had green and red and yellow underneath his underneath the Batman outfit. We started seeing that the lay down Vince Carter thing became a lot more prominent now. And the nickname started to pop up a little bit with all the little fake injuries and things that was happening here and there. Vince Carter, Vince Cartier, and another one that I won't mention, but let's just say it rhymes with the words Regina Martyr. so there was that whole phenomenon that started happening. They made the playoffs that year. First and only playoff series that they won against the Knicks. Then they had the legendary series against the 76ers, of course, that went to 7 games with Iverson before they lost.
You know what? Before you get into the playoffs, the one thing I remember about that season, my moment was going to a home game.
Yeah.
Taking my oldest for his birthday for a home game and getting $80 seats, so $160, and watching Vince do nothing and whine on the floor. And I was so pissed because I spent $160 plus parking and he didn't show up. And for a great player with all that talent, I just wasted my money. And I was so vexed at that moment, because when you go see supposedly a great talent, a magic, you're supposed to every single night you play, right? And I felt like he cheated me, and he cheated my son. He cheated everybody in the stands because he just didn't play hard all the time, right?
But again,
that was my moment.
But again, he was so the talent was still so ridiculous at that point in time. He was still putting up like 28 a night.
Yeah,
you know. So it's like you saw it, but you didn't see it. You know, like I think the average person still was, oh, you know, he's doing a great job. You know, but you look a little deeper, you're like, I'm not liking these signs right now.
And during that game, he did score 24, and they beat, I think, Atlanta. But out of that 24, he scored, I think, 14 in the last quarter. Mm-hmm. But and the first three quarters, he did nothing. So I got cheated. Like, Everybody was happy that Toronto won and he got 24 and he was they remember him getting the dunk at the end and so forth and so forth. But I was sitting pissed off for three quarters. And even though he played good in the fourth, I was still vexed because I only got a quarter of the show.
But again, because as I mentioned before, here's an athletic talent that we've never seen before. And you're starting to see that he's not quite reaching the potential that it could be, you know? Mm. Like, you're seeing it with Kobe, you saw it with T-Mac, you know, but you know Vince had another gear, but for whatever reason, he wasn't getting to it. So we got to touch on the graduation thing really quickly.
Go ahead.
Well, no, say what you want to say first.
Go intro the graduation thing.
What I'll say is this, and this is the thing I never understood. Yes, it's game seven, and of course you should miss your preparation to break your routine for game seven. For a graduation that, mind you, if you think about this, he came into North Carolina in 1995, which means his graduating class is 99. So even though he got his diploma, it's 2001. It's not like he's graduating with the same class. It's not like he's going to the ceremony to go meet Joe, who was in his class in accounting for 3 years, or marketing, and celebrate that moment. These are kids that was below him at that point in time.
Online classes?
Yeah, like, who cares? And don't they have ceremonies
online
in the fall?
Classes?
But don't they have ceremonies in the fall on top of that too?
He's rich enough to get his own ceremony.
Yeah, exactly. At that point, yeah. So I never understood that. Of course. You know, he only had about 20 points in the game seven. He played pretty well, but of course he missed a shot at the end, and that moment kind of sticks with him forever. I think that was the beginning of the end for him, for a lot of people, myself included. And I know some of his teammates, even though he said in the interview that they were all to a man, said, "Oh yeah, you know, go ahead, take that trip. But you got to know that in the biggest moment of your career, of the franchise's career, you gotta stay in the bunker with your team."
To be honest with you, I was more pissed off at the organization than Vince Carter. Because that's BS. Because listen, I was already questioning Vince Carter at that point. You know, from back then.
Well, I was already questioning Vince Carter. A lot of us were. A lot of the diehard ball players were.
So at that point, I'm running that organization. I'm like, "Are you crazy? You nuts? You're going where? What? Huh? Yo, dude, you're in Philly.
Yeah, sit your ass.
You'll be in the Marriott or wherever.
Get a Philly cheesesteak down the road."
Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
You know?
You know, like, to me, that was utterly ridiculous. I argued with my wife about that because she says, "Oh, it's fine. You know, he should have gone and he's getting his diploma." And I said, "No, you know what? Men's paying you millions of dollars to play this game."
And you know what?
It's a job.
And you know what? We saw Shaq do this. I think a few years later, we saw Shaq. He graduated from LSU, and he went to the ceremony. I think he might have even missed a game, if I remember. The game was in November. Yeah. Right? So to me, again, you could have either created a ceremony or there was one that you could have went to. And again, the most important thing, this wasn't his graduating class. Uh-oh. What does it matter at that point? Just play game seven. I think the University of North Carolina would have completely understood.
Listen. Anybody who grew up playing any kind of sport, any love of any kind of sport, and now you're having the opportunity to play in the NBA for a playoff round.
But
are you kidding?
Seven.
No, but I don't care if it's game one or game seven. This is your job. This is what they're paying you to do.
This is what you went to school for.
This is it. This is your life. Like, other than family and God and friends, this is it. This basketball is what it's about.
And even in that interview with that he had with Steve Smith, and Steve Smith asked him, "Would you do it again?" And he said, "Absolutely." I'm like, I don't believe that. How can you believe that? Look at everything that happened after that, at least with this city. You know, it just, like I said again, that was a moment where the two greatest words in sports is game seven. You know, once game seven happens, that's it. Even as a fan, like, I tell the wife, "Listen, it's game seven. So, you know, I'm going to be in front of the TV for the next 3 hours." And it could be baseball. It could be hockey. you know, it doesn't matter. If it's a championship game, like, I'm shutting it down. And I'm, you know, and I know a lot of, there's hundreds of thousands of fans just like me. Game seven, that's it. You know, so as a player, you know, nothing else matters at that point.
Curling game seven?
No, except curling, yeah, the Scott Tournament Hearts. You can't, you can't beat that. And I think from there, it was starting to become the beginning of the end at that point. 2002, had a good year. He missed 22 games. He had 24 points, 24.7 points, 5.2 rebounds, 4 assists. He shot 43% from the field, 79% from the line, 39% from the three-point line. He had an assortment of injuries. He had the exploratory surgery, and he shut it down that year. Once, I guess, he felt like the Raptors weren't going to make the playoffs, and he shut it down. And that was the year where they went and won like 12 of the last 14 games and still made the playoffs without him. And at that point, I think the city started to really turn on him. And I went to a couple of those playoff games. The atmosphere, and I've always said this, I think Toronto has some of the best playoff atmosphere environments in sports. It's just, it's unreal. We didn't sit down from the layup line, from pregame warm-ups until the end of the game. I didn't sit in my seat that whole time, and neither did anybody else. And I believe, especially at that time, the Leafs didn't make the playoffs that year. So, as usual. So you basically had even the hockey fans there. You know, it was just, it was an unreal environment. They played Detroit. They lost in five games. I think Chris Childs took a horrible shot with seconds to go that basically cost them the a chance to go to overtime, I believe. But either way, they still made the playoffs without Vince Carter at that point, who decided to shut it down. And then I remember, at the time he had exploratory surgery. They didn't find anything at the time. So now people that just think this guy's a straight up, you know, I don't have the beeps for this, you know. The whole city basically at that point just started turning in on him. And even off the court, it was pretty rough for him. You know, let's just say the fans had a lot to say to Vince. You know.
I remember those stories.
Yeah, it got to that point because people were, I think he realized Canada ain't that nice, you know, at that point.
But again, it's. I think the franchise put too much on his shoulders because a lot of times you identify somebody as being that franchise player, and he's wrongly identified, right? And they just needed to bring in somebody else to help him stay on top, to help him to be pushed and realize that, again, going back to the phrase, he wasn't that bad.
Well, they did bring somebody in, Hakeem Olajuwon, remember?
Yeah. Try to keep a straight face.
Remember the bag of bones, Hakeem? Yeah. And listen, Hakeem is one of my favorite players of
all time.
And when they, and
not
when
in Toronto though. That's
no.
Like,
the joke is when they picked him up, I said, you know what? He still has a little bit left in the tank. This is actually a pretty good deal. You know, you move Antonio Davis down to power forward, his natural position.
Hakeem shut it down.
Oh, this could work. And then I went to a preseason game, and I said, shit.
Hakeem shut it down.
Shit, we got had. Oh, boy.
Yeah, Hakeem was collecting pogey.
He took that money and ran. You know, I guess I don't blame him. Maybe I would have done the same thing if I was in this position. But that was their way of trying, I guess, the management for that year. But yeah, it definitely didn't work out, obviously. You know, going into 2003 now, the only thing memorable from this season, number one, he only played 43 games in 2003. He averaged about 20 points, 20.6 points, 4 boards, 3 rebounds. And the most memorable moment of that season is that he had to give up his starting spot in the All-Star game to Michael Jordan. That was like basically the only thing that you really remember from that season, and that was a whole controversy because he didn't want to give up the spot, and you know, he was basically kind of hog-tied to do it, you know. So nothing to speak of that season. 2004, he played a little bit better. He played 73 games. He averaged about 22.5 points, 4.8 boards, 4.8 assists. He went 42% from the field, 80 from the line, 38 from threes. He had a little bit of a bounce back year. The talent definitely regressed around him that year. Mm. It was year one of Chris Bosh, though.
Mm.
You know, so there was somebody there that, you know, especially now when you look back, you look at his career. You know, there was somebody there that could have helped.
That could have helped.
He wasn't bad. He was pretty good his first year. Mm-hmm. But I think at that point, Vince was, you know, he wanted more than a rookie, a skinny rookie at that.
Yeah, but at that point, I think he already threw in the towel. At that point, he was more of the Vince Carter of the shooting threes, fading away, mm-hmm. as opposed to attacking the rim.
He basically stopped attacking the rim.
You weren't seeing those glorious athletic moves again until he got traded. Then you kind of saw traces of it pop out in Jersey.
Yeah, and then we'll go to that here. 2005, and this was the season where he officially shut it down in the city. I'm going to read you the split stats here, right? We'll start with Toronto first. He played 20 games for the Raptors that season before he got traded. He averaged 16 points a game, right? 3.5 boards, 3.1 assists, 1.3 steals. The steals and the blocks are pretty much on par for his career. 41% from the field, 32% from three, 70% from the line. And I went to about two of these games, and even in that interview again, he said that, you know, his comments were kind of taken out of context with him not trying hard, and he said, you know, he never stopped playing. He always played hard and gave it 100%. But listen, I went to a couple of those Raptor games, and there was one game in particular. They played the Spurs. He never crossed the three-point line for about three quarters. Every time, back and forth. I think he might have stepped in the three-point line maybe twice. He just went from one corner to the other corner.
Hmm.
Passed, went to the other corner, went back up down the court. He never did anything. And then in the fourth quarter, he basically sat, and they actually won without him, right? So, of course, he gets traded. And, you know, the trade, of course, they got it was one of the most lopsided trades in history, you know.
Which pissed me off because I was begging for them to trade him years before. Where they could have get something for him,
but the value, if people remember at the time, was down nothing. At the time.
Everybody knows he wanted out.
He wanted out. So,
where are you going to trade? Are you going to trade somebody that wants out?
Yeah, you know, and I don't care what anybody says. At that point in time, he was done.
He handcuffed the organization at that point.
I mean, now, mind you, Rob Babcock didn't help the situation because that was the year he drafted Rafael Araujo.
Well, that was going to be his help, though. I was his Batman.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Even though there was probably a better Batman, maybe the pick after. I think his name is Andre Iguodala. Yeah. Well, we won't talk about that. We won't talk about that. Yeah, so we basically got back Eric Williams, Aaron Williams, the contract for Alonzo Mourning. So basically we got back like a Wendy's Happy Meal and a bag of roti. Basically, that's all we got for him. All right. So, as soon as he goes to New Jersey, here's the stats for the final 53 games. 27.5 points. Think about that. He went from 16 points to 27.5 points a game right away. Right. Six rebounds a game, 4.7 assists. He shoots 46% from the field. 42% from three, 82% from the line. He basically went back to being the superstar.
Yeah.
You know, the superstar talent he was. And he was playing on a perfect team because the superstar of that team
was a
guy that wants to pass the ball, which is Jason Kidd. Yep. So this was like heaven for Kidd.
Yep.
You know? So at that point now, his career took off. Again, you know, he went right back to being a star from the first game after the trade.
Hmm.
And his first game back to Toronto a few months later was one of the more horrific environments that an opposing player can step into. I didn't get a chance to go to the game personally, but anybody who watched that game, we wanted blood.
Yeah, that was a classic game.
And every moment after that since, we wanted blood, right? So,
'cause you got cheated, though. You got cheated, and you know damn well you got cheated.
Well, that's it, and I'll touch on this a little bit later, but I keep saying it, we had a transcendent talent, and we didn't get the full value of it. You know, we looked at LA, we saw Kobe, you know, unleash holy hell on the league, Tracy McGrady was doing everything and more to the league as well. And here we had a guy who was just as talented and he just didn't care.
Yeah.
You know, at that point in time. And the way I like to describe it is that he wanted to be, as you said, he wanted to be Robin. He wanted to be one of the guys, which is totally fine. But at a certain point, and this is in all facets of life, sometimes your talent, your God-given abilities doesn't allow you to be one of the boys or one of the guys. Sometimes it forces you to stand out because you have to do it, right? It's a situation where you have to fulfill that potential, not just for yourself or your family, but for the team that you play for, the city, everything else.
And that's true. I agree, but we're all built differently.
No, I agree.
Right?
I agree.
And it's all from inward out. So the heart is first, right? To have that transcendent talent. Yes, he did, but he didn't have that heart. And that's the first part of that talent that's going to carry you into greatness, mm-hmm. into the Hall of Fame, is those guys have heart, right? Those guys are the ones who, you know, they're going to die on that court. They're not going to go to a graduation.
No.
They want to take that last second shot. And when they do, it's not going to be a fadeaway three. Those guys have... Those guys are what changes the game.
And they're not going to crack a smirk after they miss that shot.
Right.
Right? Like Iverson, I remember...
And then go hug everybody and their mom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Right after the game is over. So you're watching... You know, I mentioned T-Mac and Kobe. You're watching somebody like Iverson who... there's a legendary story of him being hurt. And he still wanted to play. And he was... The management was so... They were so against him playing, they actually hit his uniform. So he went to the locker room. His uniform wasn't there. And this is in New York City. They were playing the Knicks. And this guy left Madison Square Garden and went to the NBA store to buy his own jersey so he can play in the game. You know? Think about that.
Yeah.
Right? And
that's a legend. That's what
legends are made of. Yeah. Right? And now we have... And we had this guy who was just as talented, but... for whatever reason, was just wired differently. He just wanted, like I said again, he wanted to be one of the guys when his talent, you know, it stood out.
Hmm.
You know, he had the mentality of to be a Robin, but he was Batman.
You tell him he's hurt, he'll be like, do I even need to travel to New York?
Yeah, you know, seriously.
Can I just stay in Toronto?
Then over the years, you know, he did certain things. Like, for example, you know, one of the years he was, I don't even remember which year, but one year he was hurt and he was... Oh, there was a road trip, and he stayed back because his knee was hurting. And then Nelly had a concert, and guess who's dancing on stage in front of 20,000 people, you know, while he's supposed to be nursing this injury, you know. But he loved all the perks of being a superstar, but didn't want that responsibility of really shouldering the load for that, you know. So, like I said again, it's sometimes in life. The talents that you're given, you have to stand out. You're not allowed to be. You can't be one of those guys anymore because, like I said again, you're not fulfilling the potential that you have, you know. And that's so looking just through his career and watching all those moments, and then hearing everybody, you know, 10 years later, wax poetic and romanticize. And I get it, and romanticize the notion of Vince Carter being, you know, having this incredible legacy on the city. I'm like conflicted with it, you know, because yes, I agree because of the talent, but then on the flip side, I remember all the bad shit that he did, you know, and the unfulfilled promises, and you know, and the moments where, you know, you really wonder, like, how tough is this guy, you know?
But again, that's like I said earlier, Vince Carter to me is a part of the history of basketball in this great city.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the basketball reason that all these kids are who they are now.
Yeah.
Right? These kids are remembering the dunks and they're remembering, but
the pretty moments.
But the history of basketball in the city is so rich that these kids don't even know their own history. All they're looking at is Vince Carter, an American, coming in here and wearing that Raptor uniform for the years he played and doing his thing. And they're young. They're so young. They didn't go through those pains of failures that the older heads went through watching them.
Mm-hmm.
not fulfill his talents.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Those guys were young. They were babies still. Mm-hmm. They're remembering the flash, the highlights.
The dunk contest. And yeah.
But they weren't invested as the older cats were in the game of Toronto basketball. The history didn't begin with the way when you hear these kids talk, it's like the history began with Vince Carter. No, the history began with like the David Josephs, the Norm Clarks, you know, the Simeon Mars.
The Phil Dixons,
yeah. Right? Like, you know, the history is rich way beyond that. And I think these kids are forgetting these guys went down south, played, and some of them played overseas and had great programs with the national teams and so forth. And then they came back and they gave to the communities.
Gave their life to the community.
And a lot of us coached. Like, I was down south. I came back. I got involved in coaching. There's a lot of guys like myself who came back and gave to the community. And I think that's what these kids don't understand. That's the richness of the city in basketball that these kids are not grasping because they're too young.
Yeah.
Right? They're just another generation who's benefiting from two generations prior.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Vince Carter is a rich part of the basketball history, but he's not the history.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And even for myself, I mean, you know, when I'm you know, coming from Montreal and I moved here, shout out to Eastern Commerce, and you know, playing for that rich high school with his rich history of basketball, even those guys. And you're watching like the, you know, Vidal Messiahs and different guys like giving back to the city right now, you know, with all the programs and teaching the proper fundamentals, the proper mentality to have, even the proper nutrition, proper diets, just different things that's going along with it. And now these kids are benefiting from that too. Like Vince, I think it's, as you said, it's part of it, but there was such I think our generation basically decided to change that, the frontier of that. Because when I was coming up in high school, having to play power forward as a 6'2" or center as a 6'2" player, you know, is something that would be laughed at today. Mm. You know? But that was a lot of us back then. Like back then you had a coach that knew basketball but wasn't really invested in it totally. You know, once you got past 6 feet, he didn't want you dribbling the basketball past half. Up and down the court, you know, you're only allowed to post up and shoot hook shots or, you know, learn the mic and drill 100 times, but you weren't allowed to dribble with the point guards, you know, like you weren't allowed to just develop properly, you know. So like Vince Carter did shed light in terms of the NBA, but as you said, there's with the Nick Stauskas and the Wiggins and everybody else, you know, it's I think a light needs to be properly shed more on that than anything else.
There's, again, I get annoyed, not frustrated, but annoyed when I see that credit is not being given enough to the past generations of basketball heads who played in this city.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, there's so much of ballers who went through and came back and gave. And even the ones who played CIS, even CIS started to get better.
Yeah.
Right? Even OCA started to get better because guys were now coaching OCA teams, right? Coaching high school teams. And you've seen the fruits of those labors.
Yeah, and the level of coaching was way better than it was, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you know? So I agree with you with that for sure. It's... hopefully that changes, though, because, as you said, again, I mean, there is a rich history here. It's an unknown history to south of the border, but for us, you know, here and to like even Montreal as well, you know, there's so many great basketball players who bled, you know, and blood, sweat, and tears for that craft, and might not have made the NBA, but it definitely helped pave the way for this generation now, which is.
But well, there was NBA talent.
Oh, no, of course.
Yeah, there was NBA talent in Toronto and Montreal, across Canada, more so in Toronto and Montreal, but there was NBA talent. There was definitely NBA talent, but back then, of course, the recruiting and all that stuff wasn't the same, and, you know, they weren't given the opportunities to succeed.
Yeah.
the league as such as today, but there was definitely NBA talent way back then.
Yeah, so I'll leave with this with Vince Carter. Here's my question to you. I'll ask, do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
Do I think he's a Hall of Famer? If you want to base the Hall of Fame on highlight reels,
making All-Star games,
and where were you when these things happen moments?
Yeah, pop culture moments.
Yeah, you know, yeah, for sure. Because yeah, as much as I hated him at one point for not playing hard, a lot of times he had me running around my living room.
Yeah,
right. And picking up my phone and dialing everybody. And did you see that? And looking at tapes over and over again. Like, I mean, I was one of those guys as well, right? So I bless his soul for giving me those moments. I don't know. Hall of Fame. I'm. Man, if he got in,
he's gonna get in.
Yeah. But I can't see him being first time, like on the first ballot.
Well, I think what,
based on the numbers, yeah. But
I think more than anything, what helps his case is because Joe Dumars gets in and Mitch Richmond gets in, and his stats are a lot better than those guys, right? So just that, on that alone, he's gonna get in, but. He almost doesn't deserve to get in. I don't want to say deserve, because that's a harsh word.
Because based on his talents, he should have.
Oh, based on
he should have kicked the door down to the Hall of Fame.
Listen,
not just opened it and squeezed through.
Based on his talents, I really believe he should have been probably at worst top 12 of all time.
Yeah,
at worst.
That's an athlete you'll never see
again. Yeah, at worst, top 12 of all time. At worst. You know, and now I looked at the stats the other day. His career stats, he's averaging like 19 for his career. Now, mind you, the last few years, he's you know, he's taken on reserve roles and everything else. But even to that point, like, he should be, everything I see with Kobe and everything that he's going through, he should be either right there or just below it, you know. And here we are debating if he should be in the Hall of Fame.
But even
now I think he should be in the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame because of the influence he might have had with the Raptors and really putting the Raptors on the mat.
Even to what you just said, the reserve roles, I cannot think of any elite NBA talent who would be willing to take those reserve roles for so many years and the back end of their career. Yeah. Like, I can't.
And it speaks to... It speaks to the mentality that he is.
It's who he is.
He's one of the guys now. Now he's just one of the guys.
That's who he was, though. That's who he always was.
Yeah.
But I can't see like an alpha dog ever taking that back seat.
Well, look
for that long.
Well, look at Iverson, right? That's why Iverson basically caught shoot away from the game, right? Because he didn't want to take those roles, even though it was clearly declining. You know, and look at Kobe. Like, We're watching Kobe, you know, up until a few months ago, this guy's still taking 25 shots a game, still think he's going to make the playoffs, even though he can't, you know, go by your mother at this point, you know? So like I said again, he wanted to be one of the guys, but his talent, as Uncle Ben said in Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility, you know? He never appreciated that responsibility, you know, or really understood what that truly meant, you know, because if he did, we're having a completely different conversation.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know,
definitely.
So we're out of time. So let me just wrap up here. Once again, I would like to thank you, Curtis, for being the first guest on the show.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I'll just give you a quick thing, shout out to you, just because you and my other brother Chris were the reason why I got into sports. It's kind of why I still talk about it every single day. It's kind of why I still entering this venture right now. So it was important for me for you to be my first guest. So, you know, I thank you for coming, because that it means more to me than you actually realize. So thank you very much for that. You can wipe the tear off your face. It's okay. Just okay. Let it go.
Okay, stop it. Love you too.
So I definitely like
it. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure though. Long time.
Yeah, and of course you're welcome to come to do more shows, you know, everything else. You know, this will be the very last time I give you these kind of props, but you know, it's all good. So just soak this in right now. But I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Av Podcast with Kyle C. This is part of the South Shore Av Radio.
Once Marist again, College, shout out. Sorry, I got to say that.
Who?
Marist College, baby. God.
Anyways, I'm going to edit that one out.